Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. In the past week, markets went from a rotation trade to an outright sell-off of risk assets and a flight to safety. That trend continued overnight in Asia and this morning here in the U.S. So joining us today to discuss what's driving these extreme moves, whether they will continue, and how the investment outlook has shifted, I'm glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning to kick off another trading week. A lot to catch up on in consideration of the market volatility. So thank you for joining us today.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here. And what normally would be a sleepy Monday, but that's certainly not the case today.
So with that, Jason, I'm curious, let's start with these big market moves across really all asset classes. What's your take on what's going on?
Well, let's put first in the context of these moves over the past month. You know, there's been sizable rotation across the markets, within equity markets, across different markets, with yields also going lower. Just to give some context, last week, the S&P was down a few percent, but the two-year Treasury yield fell 50 basis points last week, and then it's already down another 20 basis points this morning. But it's not just a U.S. story. This is a global story. Particularly Japan is quite notable. You know, Japanese equities are down 12% today, and then over 20% in local terms, just from their peak in mid-July. And the yen has gone from like 162 to 142 in the past few weeks. So very, very sizable moves. There's already a little bit of concerns among the investor community about U.S. growth slowing, and then as well as kind of some disappointment on the AI-related earnings stories. But I think really the catalyst, the straw that kind of broke the investors' back, so to speak, came on Friday with the July jobs report. These growth concerns kind of accelerated, flipped to more outright recession fears. And then coupled with that, the concern that the Fed is now behind the curve in cutting real rates. The Fed had a meeting last week. They guided or gave indication that rate cuts could start in September. But for the markets, right now that's sort of proving not to be kind of enough. And so a hard landing scenario that seemed a very low probability, even just a month ago, and certainly for much of this year, now it's become much more likely in some investors' eyes. So that's contributed towards, a flight to safety, investors getting more defensive. But there's also, kind of keep in mind, a lot of technical selling of position adjustments coming into this month or in the summer, let's say the end of June, early July, positioning by and large across a lot of investors, especially fast money investors, hedge fund, systematic strategies like momentum traders, CTAs, they were kind of fully allocated on a risk. And a lot of consensus in certain type of trades that are now getting unwound. So a lot of technicals that are also driving the market, a lot of unwind of carry positions that are exacerbating these moves because the fundamental picture has not changed enough to justify a 70 basis point move in the 10-year or the 2-year yield just in 4 or 5 days. But that's kind of what's driving it. It's heightened concerns about the macro environment shifting and central banks are not being kind of quick enough to respond to that.
So, Jason, you mentioned that investor concerns about a recession and the Fed being behind the curve have increased. Let's begin with the economy. How likely at this point is a recession?
Well, a soft landing is still our base case. We think a recession is more the bear case. Let's put 20-25% probability on a recession beginning within the next 12 months. That's perhaps gone up a little bit, given the light of recent data, but it's still like a not close to being the base case. The premise for our kind of soft landing thesis is really the idea that the consumer spending and the labor market, they may both continue to cool, but they won't crack. And let's start with the labor market because it was a jobs report on Friday that was sort of the catalyst for the move that we saw Friday, and they're continuing today. The results came in below expectations. The consensus forecast was for 175,000 jobs. It was 114,000. Now, there's maybe some overstating the weakness due to distortions caused by Hurricane Beryl, as well as there's some auto plant production shutdowns in July that could be kind of biasing a little bit of the labor market data. The BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, said that wasn't the case, but there is at least some facts in there that would suggest that maybe there's a little bit of noise that we have to take it with a grain of salt. But it is consistent overall with the labor market kind of cooling, for really on a direction of travel for the past, couple of years. This isn't inconsistent with it. It just was a bigger deterioration than investors had expected. But if we look at the overall labor market and where it stands, some of this cooling has brought it back to a level of balance where it was right before the pandemic began. There are still more job openings than there are unemployed workers, that's kind of a similar ratio. And the cool in the labor market seems to be much more of a increased labor supply than a weakening of demand story. But again, we still had positive job growth last month, and it's been, you know, strong job growth for the past couple of years. Just over the last 12 months, the non-farm payrolls total employment increased 2.5 million. So it's not necessarily a sign of weak demand. It's a sign of maybe perhaps a strong labor supply. And this is a critical point for another piece of the labor market report that has investors a little bit worried. That's the rise in the unemployment rate to 4.3% from 4.1%. And as a result, it triggered the kind of SOM recession rule indicator. Now, this is a rule that was developed by a former economist at the Federal Reserve, Claudia Sahm, in which she documented how if you take the three-month average of the unemployment rate, if it rises more than 50 basis points from its low in the prior 12 months, then that's always coincided with her start of recession since 1960. Well, that, you know, average unemployment rate has risen now more than 50 basis points, you know, after, you know, Friday's jobs report. And so this is sort of consistent with, you know, history that suggests maybe recession is around the corner. But most of the rise in the unemployment rate does appear to be due to a large increase in labor supply. A lot of that is a result of the kind of immigration surge over the past couple of years. If you look at initial jobless claims, which are really more of an indicator of labor demand, not supply, they are still very low by historical levels. I mean, they've been upticking a little bit, but certainly compared to past recessions, they really have not moved much over the past couple of years. And if you look at its historical patterns, whereas they both rise, initial claims and the SOM rule have risen sort of in conjunction or together, leading into a recession. In this cycle, which has been very unique, they've decoupled. You've seen the SOM indicator rise, but the initial claims have held very low. The labor demand, you know, could cool and further cool, but really the dynamic right now so far is that companies are hiring few workers, and they're also laying off very few. You can see that in job cut announcements, and also just generally companies don't lay off workers, you know, unless they're really pushed. It's kind of the last thing they do. That's why the labor market tends to be a lagging indicator. And they only do that once their profits are getting squeezed and profit margins are coming down. The earnings season has been good. It's kind of validated our kind of call for earnings growth for the S&P 500 companies to grow 11% this year. Margins are holding steady. So there's not a sign of profits really being squeezed for large public companies. And then you take kind of for the economy overall, there's something called a NIPA profit, or the national accounts. This includes a lot of small businesses. These profits have surged post-pandemic. There's no real signs yet of them rolling over, although the best data we have so far is just through the first quarter. If you go back to the recession in 2001, the recession that began in 2007 during the financial crisis, profit levels really rolled over a year, 2 years prior to the start of recessions. Then you only saw then companies start to kind of lay off workers. We're just not seeing that dynamic. So I think the labor market is really starting looking more like it's cooling, not cracking, and that should continue to play out. So that will be predicated on the consumer spending, but they kind of feed each off each other. A strong labor market supports consumer spending supports a strong labor market. During the earnings season for Q2, there's a lot of anecdotes that sort of soften the consumer spending, but the overall macro data suggests more normalization than deterioration for consumer spending. And if you look at households' kind of overall financial conditions, it's in good shape. Real incomes are now rising because wage growth is faster than inflation. Wealth has increased tremendously over the past, you know, 4 years at all kind of income tier levels. And even though interest rates have risen, the kind of debt servicing costs on average for households are still very low because they locked in mortgage rates at, you know, 3-4% or even 2% in some cases. So households are in good shape. So the typical stresses that you need to see in the private sector to make a recession likely, they're just not there. So you add it all up. Yes, you can see the economy continue to cool, but barring some shock, it really seems unlikely that the economy is going to sort of suddenly tip into recession anytime soon. And that's why we're sticking with the soft landing call.
Jason, now that we have that clarity on the health of the U.S. economy, let's factor in the Fed as well. A lot has changed since yourself and our colleague, senior economist America's Brian Rose, spoke last Wednesday on the CIO First Take podcast, recapping the Fed statement and Jerome Powell's press conference. Though, in light of these recent developments, what we witnessed on Friday, how today is shaping up, what might this all mean for CIO's current forecast for both rate cuts and the course for monetary policy from here?
Well, the takeaway from the FOMC meeting last week was that the Fed essentially laid the groundwork to start cutting rates in September. You know, they cited that risks to the economy are more balanced and sort of to both sides of the dual mandate, meaning price stability and full employment. that was a change, and that clearly indicated that they, you know, are focused hard, you know, closely on the labor market kind of softening and cooling. Our takeaway from that sort of reaffirmed our view that the Fed would start cutting rates with a 25 basis point cut in September and another 25 basis point cut in December. After we got the jobs market data, we adjusted that to ramp up what we expect from the Fed. Now, the 100 basis points of cuts this year, starting with 50 in September, and then 225 more basis point cuts. Now, granted, this is a kind of a fine line. I think we were going to move our targets, and the real question is whether we get 50 or 25 in, you know, September. I think the timing at this point is not, you know, in doubt. It's very, very likely the Fed will start cutting rates in September. The real question just now is, like, how much will the Fed cut this year, and how much will they, you know, kind of begin with? The market is pricing, you know, as of this Friday's close, nearly 125 basis points of cuts this year, and there's about a 75% chance of a 50 basis point cut in September. And earlier this morning, I did see that the market was even pricing a 25% chance, a 25 basis point cut just in the next week. So clearly, the market has moved very aggressively. And it's sort of a sign of how much investors are concerned with, you know, how much the economy could be slowing. Now, the open question is just how much is the Fed concerned about the labor market and cooling, especially in light of not just Friday's labor market report, but the ISM manufacturing survey came in, kind of weak. So there's further data since the FOMC meeting that would sort of suggest the economy is cooling. Now, we think that there's enough case for the Fed to certainly do, you know, 75 basis points, and we ultimately think kind of 100 basis points, beginning with 50 in September. If we go back to June at the FOMC meeting then, the Fed updated its economic projections. This included a forecast of a 4% unemployment rate in December and a core PC inflation rate of 2.8%. Well, as of Friday, the unemployment rate is 4.3% and trending higher, while the core PC inflation is, most current reading, is 2.6%. So the Fed's kind of on target for its inflation, but it's now exceeding its forecast as of June for the unemployment rate. During this press conference, Chair Powell emphasized that the FOMC didn't want to see the labor market cool further and will respond to further softening. Presumably Friday's data, you know, kind of gives them some of that justification to be a little bit more aggressive. Are there also policy rules that the Fed could follow, such as the Taylor rule? You know, a number of these rules all would suggest, even before Friday's labor market report, that the Fed should start cutting rates, that they're already kind of in some sense behind the curve. So the Fed has the data, the kind of the model suggesting they should be aggressive. Ultimately, what they will do is data dependent. So if the August payrolls report sort of bounces back, suggests a lot of the July data was due to weather, chances are the Fed may only do a 25 basis point cut. But if it is sort of another sort of softish report, I think the 50, you know, becomes quite likely. And, you know, the market has opened up the Fed, you know, given the Fed that opportunity. Whether they take it will remains to be seen. We will get some guidance from Fed speakers this week, and then a lot of focus will be on the Jackson Hole Central Bank meeting on August 23rd. That's when Powell will be speaking. That will be his opportunity to kind of lay out a path for the Fed rate cuts kind of going forward, and maybe even tip his hand that, you know, a 50 basis point cut is on the table for September. But until then, there's a little bit of an information void in terms of what the Fed is thinking. And as long as that's going on, I think the markets will be a little bit anxious.
So with that, Jason, what does this all mean for markets from here? And how are investors, broadly speaking, responding to these significant market moves?
Well, it really depends on what investor types you're talking about. I think sort of the long-only kind of, you know, asset allocation type of investors such as ourselves are being a little bit cautious and not overreacting to this information, especially as I've alluded to, that we have confidence that the Fed will be kind of aggressive and cutting and the economy will hold up okay. But for other investors, whether it is these more systematic rules-based investors that have sort of taken on a lot of risk, or hedge funds, discretionary hedge funds that also sort of got kind of full positions, what you're seeing is, you know, this investor cohort is definitely getting sort of more defensive, although I wouldn't say they're significantly reducing risk. They pull back to some extent. They are kind of, you know, allocating maybe with an equity market, you can see the rotations more towards, you know, defensive sectors. And there's also some circumspection, I think, on sort of buying the dip, you know, which has been the mentality for much of the past 2 years. Really, if you go back to when the S&P 500 hit a kind of bear market low in the October of 22, since then, investors have been more concerned, I think, with equities kind of crashing up and missing the rally than with the markets kind of falling sustainably. And this reflected the fact that, you know, early on, investor positioning was light. asset valuations were reasonable and recession risk was generally falling, not rising. That's changed just in the past couple of months, where we now have investors that were kind of really fully allocated to all our risk. Valuations were getting stretched, and recession risk is now kind of rising. And you can see just how investor sentiment has just changed just literally on Friday, and that's continued today, just in the options markets. There's been a surge of buying for put options. So kind of the put call, kind of skew ratio has shifted a lot. It means investors are buying more downside protection. Another example is the term structure for option, volatility has inverted, meaning the kind of implied volatility for 3-month options is now higher than it is for 1 year. That's unusual. The last time we saw this inversion was in March of 23 during the banking crisis. So again, it's a sign that investors are more concerned about the economy kind of slowing rapidly and the Fed being behind the curve and things kind of derailing, more so than sort of getting much more pessimistic about kind of the 1 year, outlook. So that is sort of driving a lot of the markets is, right now it's just a position adjustment, shifting to sort of kind of at least a perspective that the macro regime is sort of moving kind of rapidly. And investors weren't positioned for that potential change in sort of outlook. Whether it's warranted or not, I think that some of it is probably a little bit oversold and overmoved more because of technical adjustments rather than sort of a fundamental data shifting to warrant such large moves.
With respect to positioning, Jason, what is CIO's current investment outlook and how is CIO recommending that investors be positioned at the moment?
Well, this inversion that I was talking about in the options market suggesting more near-term risk, but a kind of a relatively benign view, on the next 12 months. I think that sort of fits with our view. It's likely markets will remain choppy in the very near term, but ultimately over the next year, we think the macro environment with growth, the Fed cutting rates, inflation, as well as AI fundamentals should remain supportive for risk assets. And in fact, as the markets are pulling back on a 6 to 12 month horizon, we think the risk reward, certainly for equities, has actually improved, especially for the tech sector. Through Friday's close, the S&P 500 was down 6% from its all-time high in mid-July. The FANG Plus Index, which is 10 of the largest market cap tech stocks or tech-related stocks, it's down 14% from its peak, and we could see sort of more downside now. So I think you'll definitely see some investors kind of starting to kind of fish around and looking for some, buying opportunities. But until we get some, indications that the economic data is not as bad as investors feared, or guidance from the Fed that sort of its Fed put is being activated, and that doesn't mean the Fed has to do immediate, rate cuts. But it just has to change the perception that it's kind of behind the curve, that what the market's expecting or wants from the Fed versus what it's kind of guided to thus far is misaligned. If that sort of shifts, where the Fed can say, we'll be kind of more aggressive, that will do preemptive insurance rate cuts, kind of ensuring it's offline, and that would definitely alleviate a lot of investor concerns. That may not happen until the September FOMC meeting, but some guidance before can at least move them in that direction, as well as data kind of being not as bad as investors feared. So, while it's certainly possible that the market, will remain volatile in the near term, and there could be more downside, the way we kind of think of it is that similar to last fall, the S&P fell, 10% because of overheating concerns and the risk that the Fed would have to get more restrictive with Fed policy. Those concerns were ultimately proven unfounded. We think these concerns about kind of slowing growth and a Fed being sort of too slow also will be kind of unfounded, but it may take, a couple of months before that's kind of justified. In the meantime, what we think is in the overall messaging is still very consistent with what we've seen before. We see kind of good upside on the next 12 months for equities. We like the tech sector, and the valuations are getting more compelling and interesting and sort of properly perhaps align with the kind of the growth trajectory for earnings. But all that said, we continue to favor kind of quality growth stocks. Techs are part of that. We favor kind of quality, fixed income. We're seeing spreads widen out, but not necessarily to a level that we still feel that there's a compelling opportunity within spreads. And given the pullback in rates, and some of it feels like it's a bit of an overshoot, we'd be cautious on sort of, adding duration. We think, if anything, you want to shorten up your duration at the moment because rates could kind of rise as the market sort of readjusts, sort of, after some bit of an overreaction, perhaps, largely due to some technical kind of, buying in the fixed income space because rates could sort of back up again. So be cautious about adding a long duration at this point in time. There's likely to be a better entry point.
Well, Jason, very much appreciate the insight and the guidance joining us to explain the drivers behind these significant market moves, sharing with us CIO's current investment outlook and providing some thoughts around how to position in this environment. So thank you very much for joining us today, Jason. We'll, of course, remain in touch and keep our listeners, our clients informed on how these developments evolve from here. Though, thank you again for your time today, Jason. Appreciate it.
You're welcome and have a good week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.